And here's the Fred Allen Show, presented by the makers of Tenderleaf Tea and Shepherd Cheese. The best-selling tea balls in the United States, month in, month out, rain or shine, are Tenderleaf tea balls because they are so much better in every way. Famous for flavor, Tenderleaf brand tea accounts for superb cup quality, and absolute cleanliness is assured by individual sanitary envelopes. Each tea ball has that extra protection. No hands ever touch the tea ball you use, not even your own, because a long string is attached with a tag on the string, and that device opens the envelope for you and carries the tea ball to the cup. That's when the tasteless filter paper shows its amazing virtues. The boiling water brings out the flavor, but nothing else can pass through that paper. Your tea is filtered as it's being made. So for every good reason, these finer tea balls outsell all other kinds. Your grocer has boxes of 8, 16, 48, and 100. Ask him for Tenderleaf brand tea balls.
I forgot to put a line in here this week, Kitty.
The makers of Tenderleaf Tea and Shepherd Cheese present the Fred Allen Show with Fred's guest, Edward G. Robinson, Corcoran Hopper, Minerva Pyles, Peter Donald, Parker Fenley, the DeMarco sisters, Al Goodman and his orchestra, and Kenny Delmar.
Ladies and gentlemen, the new Information Please Almanac was published.
Yeah.
It lists the events of the past. Now, tonight, we bring you a man who doesn't care about the past. He's only worried about the next half hour. And here he is, Fred Allen!
Thank you, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. In Portland, what is this almanac business?
Well, it's the new Information Please Almanac. It's the talk of Brentano's basement.
Oh, the talk of Brentano's basement. Speaking of almanacs, I hear it pays to be ignorant as putting out an almanac. It has 200 blank pages.
Two? 200 blank pages?
It's for people who can't read. You know, those who listen to the program, of course. With interpreters, I should have added. You know, a lot of people who can't read like to wet their fingers and turn pages. It makes them feel literate. But enough with the almanacs, Portland. What's with the news this week?
Well, the Army and Navy are merging.
Oh, I saw that in Pravda. Are they going to... are they going to have new uniforms?
Yes. The men will wear Army coats, sailor pants, and marine hats.
Yeah. What will they use for weapons?
Oh, every man will carry an oar that shoots.
A shooting oar. What is your next note?
The baseball teams are signing new players.
Oh, yes. Cleveland has Bob Feller.
Pittsburgh has Hank Greenberg.
Right.
And Brooklyn has Lorraine Day.
But only in some states. What's next? Your next item. Give me another item.
Yeah. The American Dental Association.
You're laughing at something that's coming or something that's past. Huh?
The American Dental Association.
You're not in the mood to ad lib. Yeah. All right. The American Dental
Association,
yeah,
says that teeth in the United States have 500 million cavities.
Oh, gosh. Imagine if 500 million teeth started to ache at the same time.
What would happen?
Shall I tell her? What would happen if 500 million teeth started to ache? You would hear a yell that would sound as though the mouth of the Mississippi was calling Chloe and using the Holland Tunnel for a megaphone. What's next?
Wednesday was the coldest day of the year.
Well, how cold was it?
The Weehawken Ferry took off its cliff and put it around Bear Mountain.
I saw a man combing his hair. It was so cold, the teeth in his comb were chattering.
You're joking.
are the only one who knew. Now, isn't that interesting? Well, I should hope so. You don't think I'm standing here trying to talk you into buying a fuller brush? And speaking of brushes and brooms reminds me, Porvin, I think I shall whisk along to Allen's Alley.
What is your question tonight?
Well, a prominent psychiatrist recently said that people are so woefully lacking in health education, they allow cults, fads, and phobias to ruin their health. And so our question is, how do you feel about health, cults, and fads?
Shall we go?
As the bulldog said to the mendicant, I think I shall shake a leg. Gosh, what a night in Allen's Alley, Portland. Look, the senator has a big banner on his house. It says, Eagle Lion Pictures present It's a Joke, Son, starring Senator Claghorn. Well, next knock, maybe showing the picture inside.
Son, take my hand. Any hand, son. Take a choice. There's three of them.
Now, wait a minute. Wait a minute, Blowhard.
Claghorn's the name, son. Senator Claghorn, that
Look,
is.
I know you.
I just came back from Texas, son. My new picture, It's a Joke, Son, opened at Austin.
Great excitement, eh?
It was the biggest shebang Texas has seen since they laid the cornerstone for the Alamo.
A big crowd?
We had to use two theaters. One theater was filled with nothing but governors from Georgia.
Oh, really? Hello, Senator. Senator, what about these health cults and fads?
Don't interrupt. I'm talking about my picture.
Never mind your picture. I asked you a civil question.
What's your flapping Yankee mouth, son? Don't ever mention that word civil in my presence.
You mean the war?
That war. I say that war was the war for Southern independence. I'm humming Dixie, son. Take off your hat. Uncover.
Quiet. What about this health discussion?
The South is reeking with health, son.
Yes.
A breath of southern air will cure any known malady.
People never die?
We have to be careful about that, son.
How do you mean?
Down South, a man can sit in a chair without moving for 30 days.
Yes?
That ain't no proof he's dead.
I see.
His pulse may be gone and his heart stop beating.
Yes?
That ain't no proof he's there.
Well, how do you know when the man's time has come?
We take him across the Mason-Dixon line and lay him on northern ground.
And?
If he don't crawl back over the line to the south...
Yes?
Son, that man is dead.
Come on, gentlemen. I wonder if Mr. Moody is still up. Well, let's see.
Howdy, bud.
Well, Mr. Moody, I see your lantern is lit.
Yeah, it's cold tonight. I was out putting a hot water bottle in my horse's hay.
You're fond of your horse, eh?
To me, that horse is like a brother.
Really?
Yeah. Some nights I put a harness on and go out and stand with him in the stall so he won't get lonesome.
Well, why are you so considerate of a dumb animal, Mr. Moody?
That horse saved my life.
What happened?
Well, one day I was out riding him.
Yeah?
I was going over to price some peas for potting.
Uh-huh.
I was galloping along and the britching give way.
Yeah?
I fell off the horse and broke my leg.
Gosh.
The horse drugged me all the way home, laid me on the front steps, took off his blanket and covered me up.
Really?
Then he ran 5 miles to the village and fetched a doctor.
Well, that horse is sure smart.
Yeah. He only made one mistake.
What was that?
The doctor the horse brought back...
Yes?
...was a horse doctor.
Well, tell me, Mr. Moody, what is your reaction to this health business?
Oh, it don't bother me none.
You're in good shape, eh?
I'm in good shape for the shape I'm in.
You've never had any health problems?
Well, when I was a baby, I was puling and sickly.
Well, how did they cure you?
Every day, the doctor gave me a shot in the arm.
And these shots?
When I was 5 years old, I was all shot to health. Come on, doctor.
All shot to me. Well, let's try this next door.
How's it doing?
Ah, Mrs. Nussbaum.
Were you expecting to open the door, Richard?
Jolly, what about this health problem?
Lately, for a particular reason, I'm becoming a vegetarian.
Really? What was the particular reason?
My uncle, Proctor Nussbaum, meat is killing.
Oh, he didn't watch his diet?
For 50 years, Uncle Proctor is consuming only 2 meals a day. health foods.
Health foods, huh?
Yeah, for breakfast. He's eating homogenized herring with yogurt.
Yeah.
Soybean bagel.
Yeah.
He's also drinking strange pickle juice with a dash seltzer.
Well, a tasty start for the day.
For supper, he is having Dr. Bernstein's bran borscht with whole wheat blintzes. Knishes with acidophilus.
Yeah.
And seaweed with on top a little drop sterilized chicken fat.
Well, if your Uncle Proctor ate only these health foods, how did meat cause his demise?
One day, he's standing on a corner waving to Bernard McFadden, Uncle Proctor.
Uh-huh.
It's stopping suddenly a big truck.
Yes?
From on top of the truck is falling 300 pounds of fancy brisket.
Yes?
The fancy brisket is hitting him on the head.
And?
That is how meat is killing Uncle Proctor.
Oh, right. That brings us to the last shanty in Allen's Alley. What can possibly happen here?
You know what, Dr. Clatterworth, I said to you, I'm here to show you my Oh, how do you do?
Well, Mr. Cassidy, how are you tonight?
Oh, terrible, terrible, terrible. I've got old rheumatics.
You mean new rheumatics?
This is old rheumatics. I've had it for 40 years.
Oh, well. You're in bad shape.
I never felt better in my life.
Tell me, Ajax, what about these health cults and fads?
Well, no, the Cassidys were the healthiest family in all Ireland.
Really?
My grandfather, Black Angus Cassidy, died at the ripe old age of 140.
Yeah?
He fell over his spittoon while playing tag with a barmaid.
Well, what about your health habits, Ajax?
My exercise is the cause of all my current troubles and tribulations.
Well, how do you mean?
Well, now, Phoenix Muldoon was always exercising.
Yeah?
He'd nip out of bed, flexing his muscles.
Yeah?
Then he'd pick up his big dumbbell and swing it for an instrument behind him by the hour.
Yeah, I see.
After the plunge in lukewarm water.
Yes.
Phoenix would sprint through the woods, uphill and down the hill for the rest of the day.
Did all this exercise help Phoenix?
At the age of 33, while doing a somersault, he dropped dead in midair.
Oh, that's awful.
If he hadn't exercised himself to death, I'd be a happy man today.
Well, wait a minute. What has Phoenix Muldoon's death to do with your happiness?
He was me wife's first husband.
Oh. To bring us to the five DeMarco sisters. With an assist from Al Goodman and his orchestra, the DeMarco sing Zippity Doo Dah.
Plenty of sunshine headed my way. Zippity Doo Dah, Doo Dah, Doo Dah, Doo Dah, Zippity Doo Dah, Zippity Dah, Zippity Dah. My, oh my, what a wonderful day there. Plenty of sunshine.
Important suggestion for the family table.
Whatever concerns the family table is important to us all, and here's a good example. It's time to talk about cheese. You know how it is on a wintry Sunday afternoon. Old friends drop in. Everybody's lazy and comfortable around the fire. The conversation's good. You don't want to disturb that pleasant scene, but it's getting time to eat. If you say, won't you stay for supper, they may protest. Why not slip out into the kitchen, open up some shepherd cream spreads, pile bread on a plate, You're back in a minute with the makings for fireside sandwiches. And what fine sandwiches. Sandwiches with the mild flavor of Shepherd olive pimento or pineapple, the hearty zest of Shepherd Old York, the teasing taste of Shepherd relish. There's something as friendly and honest and welcoming as your own hospitality in those fine flavors of Shepherd cream spreads. Remember Shepherd cream spreads when you shop. They're made by the folks who've been making quality cheese for more than 40 years. And whether it's to melt or spread or slice, always say Shepherd. S-H-E-F-F-O-R-D. Shepherd for fine cheese.
Those were a few bars of It's All Over Now Mr. Goodman had left over from last week. And now, yes, Portland.
Who is our guest tonight?
Well, I didn't have time to look for a guest this week, Portland. I've been too busy.
Busy? Doing what?
Well, once a month, you know, the sponsor makes me go around to all of the tea shops and sell tender leaf tea.
To tea shops?
Oh, yes. Jack Benny has it worse. He has to go around to restaurants.
Selling Lucky Strike?
No. When people in restaurants order alphabet soup, Benny has to feel around in the alphabet soup and make sure the letters L-S-M-F-T are in the soup. That's how Mary got her new pearl necklace.
How?
Well, Benny got lucky feeling around in an oyster stew.
Were you lucky selling tea this week?
You know, the funniest thing happened.
What?
Well, Friday morning, I stuffed my pockets with tender leaf tea balls. I looked a little lumpy, but I started out. Ah, this tea room looks promising. Rasputin's Gypsy Tea Room. Favorite eating place of Molotov, Litvinov, Rubinov, and the Mad Russian. Well, I might as well go in, I guess. When the music stopped in the tea room, before I could start getting my samples out, I heard a voice say...
Well, Fred Allen.
Edward G. Robinson. Eddie, what are you...
I'll be with you in a minute, Fred. This gypsy is reading my tea leaves.
Oh, the gypsy.
Go ahead, gypsy.
You are a short man who has just finished eating a big Chinese dinner.
You can see that in the tea leaves?
I can see it on your vest.
Well, that's the past. Now, what about my future, Gypsy?
You will be poor until you are 40.
And when I'm 40?
You will be used to it. You will now cross the Gypsy's pond with silver. No checks, please.
Here you are.
The Gypsy will finish your tea. She is thirsty.
Eddie, what are you doing in this tea shop?
Well, I just finished a new picture for United Artists called The Red House, Fred. I thought I could talk this gypsy into going to see the picture.
Well, on this trip to New York, I thought sure you'd be over in front of that Brooklyn jail holding a ladder for some of your old friends.
No, Fred. You know, lately I've been out of touch with the mob.
Really?
Yes, in my last few pictures, I've been on the side of the law.
Say, it must be confusing after all these years to change types.
Well, it is, Fred. The only way I can tell which character I'm playing is to look at my hat.
Your hat?
Yes, if my hat brim is turned up, I'm a detective.
I see.
If the brim is down, I'm a gangster.
The whole thing depends on your hat brim, huh?
Yes, in one picture I was playing a crook.
Yeah?
My hat brim snapped up and I arrested myself.
Say, I saw you in The Stranger with Orson Welles. I thought you were great as the detective.
Well, when you make a picture with Orson, Fred, you have to be a detective.
Why?
Well, by the time Orson finishes producing, writing, directing, starring, and cutting...
Yes?
You have to be a detective to find yourself in the picture.
I know. I had Orson on the program once. By the time he finished with the script, all I had left to say was, this is NBC. At least in The Strangers, you had a chance. Orson committed suicide before the end of the picture.
Ah, but that didn't stop Orson, Fred. You know, he had three more lines to speak after he died.
He did? I thought that voice coming out of the hearse sounded familiar. Well, now that you are reformed, Eddie, I bet you miss playing those gangster parts.
Oh, yes, yes, Fred. You know, those were the good old days when I was public enemy number one.
You were tough. Huh?
Oh, yes, Fred. You know, in 1932, I fired so many bullets in gangster pictures.
Yes?
The DuPonts made me the man of the year.
The world was your powder room, hey? Tell me, Eddie, what do you Hollywood tough guys do for excitement?
Well, the old gang's broken up, Fred. You know, we got a bad scare last week.
What happened?
Well, one night, Humphrey Bogart, George Raft, and I were following three guys down a dark street, you know, just for a laugh.
Yeah?
We sneaked up behind them, stuck our guns in their backs, and said, "Reach for the sky!" Old buttermilk, that is. Yeah. And when the guys turned around, we dropped our guns and ran for home.
Now, wait a minute. What three guys could scare you, Raft, and Bogart?
Karloff, Lugosi, and Laurie.
You must have been walking down Green Street. Eddie, while you're an old joke Tom Howard sent over, as a... Eddie, while you're between pictures, why don't you do a crime program on the air?
Look, Fred, I have an idea for a program. It's a little different, too.
Crime program? How do you mean?
Well, every crime program and radio today glorifies policemen, men from the FBI, detectives.
That's true.
Well, my program glorifies the criminal.
Really?
It finally gives the crook a chance to tell his side of the story.
You mean your program is something like this?
Law Busters!
Tonight, again, we dedicate our program to the criminals of America. Those nefarious lawbusters who, in spite of police, prisons, and electric chairs, march forward undaunted. Their lives dedicated to busting the law.
And here is Colonel Schwartzfoot.
Thank you. Tonight, folks, you will hear the story of the most daring of all lawbusters, Little Geezer. We will interview Little Geezer's right-hand man. And here he is, Felix the Fink.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Colonel Schwartzfoot. Well, friends, my story tonight is called Little Geezer's Last Job. It all started one afternoon at a board of directors meeting of our organization, Muggs Incorporated. As the meeting opened, Little Geezer was calling the roll.
Felix the Fink.
Present, boss.
Give me Gollum, Paul.
Hey.
Fingers Lombardo.
Present.
No, it's Johnson.
Present, boss.
Well, gentlemen, I will now read you the financial statement of Muggs Incorporated. Income from hijacking, slot machines, black market bubblegum, bets won on fixed football games, gives us assets of $790,000. Now the liabilities. Operating expenses. Ammunition, fixing juries, bail jump, group health insurance plan, one slot machine payoff, an accident. Gives us total liabilities of $890,000. Gentlemen, Muggs Incorporated has a deficit of over $100,000 even.
Gee, boss, how are we going to raise $100,000 to balance the books?
Well, look, Felix, I'm president of Muggs Incorporated, see? I'm Little Geezer, see? Give me 24 hours. I'll have that $100,000, see? Good night, see?
What happened, Felix? Did Little Geezer get the money?
That night, Colonel Schwartzfoot, Little Geezer made a date to meet his mall, Homely Hannah. Well, about midnight, Little Geezer walks into Harry the Hipster's cafe.
Hello, Hannah.
Got your note, Geezer. What's Ryan?
Well, tomorrow morning, Hannah, you and me is grabbing $100,000 payroll at the Ninth National Bank. Now, here's the setup.
That's dictating, Geezer. I'm taking notes.
Well, first, we got to get rid of the bank teller.
How?
Well, you go up to him and ask him to change this counterfeit $5 bill.
A phony sin.
Well, instead of Lincoln's picture, I got Jane Russell on it.
Jane Russell, why don't you use my picture?
Well, you look too much like Lincoln. Now, here's the gimmick.
Yeah.
Now, the teller lamp's the phony fan.
Yeah.
He tells you to wait a minute, and he leaves the cage to call the cops.
Well, I'm
in line right behind you. See, I grabbed the payroll, and we beat it.
Okay.
Now, drop your veil, and let's go.
Well, Felix, what happened the next morning?
Well, at 10 o'clock, Homely Hannah enters the Ninth National Bank, Colonel. She walks slowly over to the foist teller's window. Little geezer's right behind her. Make a no noise. He's got sneakers on. The teller says...
Yes, madam?
Cash me this five, will you, teller?
Yes, ma'am. One, two, three...
Hey, look, geezer, he's cashing it.
Hey, teller, that bill's a counterfeit.
One at a time, please. This lady's first.
Yes, but Lincoln's picture's supposed to be on a $5 bill, not Jane Russell's.
Sorry, sir, I'm new here. 3, 4, 5...
Hey, you're cashing a phony bill, stupid. Leave your cage and call the cop.
Nick, geezer, put away your gun.
Heaven's a gun. Help, please.
Geezer, we're sunk!
Oh, yeah? Grab that bag. Grab it with a payroll dough.
I got it. Look, Geezer, the cops!
The jig is up, Geezer. We've got you surrounded.
Come and get me, you dirty rats.
You asked for it. Let him have it, men!
They missed me.
Felix, did the little geezer get away?
Yeah, he thought they missed him, but little geezer was so full of lead, every time he sat down, he left pencil marks.
Did the police keep on his trail?
The Gyps kept following the pencil marks, Colonel. Little geezer tried to throw him off. He got a pair of pants with a built-in eraser. But it didn't help none. Me and Geezer was making a getaway. The car was humming along the road. Suddenly, I jammed on the brakes.
What's wrong, Felix?
Look, cops.
The jig is up, Geezer. We've got the road blocked in front of you and behind you. There's no way out.
Oh, no? Let's go, Felix.
Okay. Colonel, we got away again.
Yes, but tell me, if the road was blocked in front of you and blocked behind you, how did you escape?
We was driving a new Studebaker. Nobody could tell the front from the back.
Yes?
So we went sideways.
And the police never caught you?
Nah, them dopes. Little geezer took the $100,000. He gave up crime and went straight.
What happened to him?
He's here in the studio with me tonight, ready to tell his story. Colonel Schwartzfoot, meet me old boss, the grand old man, the king of the underworld, Little Geezer.
Thank you. Hello, Warden. I mean Colonel.
Are you in those rags with the toes coming out of your shoes? You are the great Little Geezer?
Yes, sir.
What happened to you?
Well, when I got back with the $100,000, I decided to go straight.
And you went into a legitimate business?
Yes, sir. First, I bought up all the butter I could get.
I see.
Well, the price went down. The bottom dropped out of the butter market.
You lost your money?
Yeah, and then I went in the used car business. I was the smiling American.
What happened?
Well, new cars started coming out. I dropped another fortune.
Tell him the last straw, boss.
Yeah, well, I decided to sink all I had left in the fur business.
And?
3 heat waves came along. Nobody was buying furs. I was ruined. Today I haven't got a cent of my name. I'm a bum.
And in conclusion, Little Geezer, have you a message for our listeners?
Yeah, just one thing. Crime does not pay.
Yes.
And going straight is no good either.
Just as the USO will never be forgotten by the men of World War II, the USO is not forgetting the 1.5 million still serving their country and the 199,000 in the hospital. It provides them with entertainment and recreation, but most important, it is their connecting link with the folks at home. Remember, they still need USO, and USO is you. Before we remind you to remember Tenderleaf Tea and Shepherd Cheese on your shopping days, ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank Mr. Edward G. Robinson for dropping by tonight. Next week, our guest will be Lawrence Melchior. Thank you, and good night. Good night.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.